All right. Thank you very much, Chris, for the introduction, and thank you very much for the organizers for this wonderful conference and for giving me the chance to speak to you today. So I'm going to talk to you today about a particular class of holographic codes that we call hyperinvariant holographic codes. And this is work together with my collaborators, Matt Steinberg and Sebastian Feld from QTech in Delft. All right, and I'm starting with a picture that you've just seen in the previous talk, which is, of course, the starting point of well, I think most of what we're working here, or at least inspired a lot of the stuff that this collaboration is all about. And as you all know, also made it onto the logo of the collaboration, which is a class of happy codes, which is a class of holographic quantum error correcting codes. So just to briefly refresh your memories, what are happy codes? Well, happy codes, happy codes are codes built from tensor networks that induce a map between bulk and boundary indices. In this picture, red are the bulk indices, black are the boundary indices. These tensor networks that describe these codes are built from a very particular type of tensor that's called perfect tensor, which is essentially a tensor that maximally entangles each of its constituent legs or indices. And perfect tensors, in fact, describe exact quantum error correcting codes of a particular type. And the geometry, as we already heard in the previous talk, is a very particular one as well. It's a uniform hyperbolic lattice, which in some sense very naturally discretizes time slices of anti-de Sitter space-time. And well, this is a model of holography, so it reproduces some very nice features that we know and love from holography. In particular, it reproduces the Ryuta-Kayanagi formula and a version of entanglement wedge reconstruction. This is all great, and obviously this code has given us a lot of intuition on how holography and how holographic codes really work. But there are some issues and problems with happy codes, some limitations rather, that we would like to overcome. And the first limitation is really that there are no good description of finite n effects in holography. It's really very limited. In particular, happy codes don't really have any state dependence. The area operator is trivial, and the spectrum of Renyi entropies on the boundary is flat, which is not really what we expect in full holography. And the second big problem is that the correlation functions that we find of boundary states, of encoded states, don't really match what we expect from conformal field theories. So in particular, there's no smooth decay of correlation functions, and most two-point functions, in fact, most endpoint functions are just vanishing, just zero. So we can't really define a local boundary Hamiltonian or like a good boundary theory that one could call a discrete analog of a conformal field theory. And so the question that has been driving the holographic tensor network community over the past 8 years is, can we build a tensor network code that keeps all of these nice features of happy codes, but somehow resolves particularly these two problems? And that's basically the motivation for this talk as well. So brief overview, I'll just briefly motivate what most of you probably already know, why we do holographic codes to begin with, what the main features are. I'm then going to talk about why happy codes behave the way they do. Talk about greedy wedge reconstruction and the RG flow that you get from happy codes. We already heard about this briefly in the previous talk. And I'm going to talk about post-happy codes, about ways to go beyond these features. And finally, I'm going to talk about our model of hyperinvariant codes. Oops. And so first of all, why holographic codes? Well, if we believe in ADS-CFT, we believe that there is a map between bulk and boundary degrees of freedom. And of course, we can take time slices on both sides of these maps. And what we end up with then is a map, hopefully, from a time slice of ADS to a CFT state at some fixed time on the boundary. OK, now we're still continuous. Now we discretize the whole thing. We discretize it using qubits or qdits. And so we have some qdits or qubits representing this semi-classical ADS bulk on this time slice. And likewise, on the boundary, we have a discretization of this conformal field theory state. And now holography implies that between these two Hilbert spaces, there should be a map, an encoding map, from the bulk qubits to the boundary qubits. And such a map can be understood as a quantum code. So the immediate question is, what kind of properties do these codes have? Well, holography, in fact, constrains them quite severely. In particular, we already heard this in the previous talk, there's a feature called complementary recovery, which essentially means that if we take our boundary, we divided into two parts, and a complement, a bar, then the bulk information, bulk algebra, also splits into two complementary parts, one that we can reconstruct from A and its complement, that we can reconstruct from A bar. The second important feature is that for finite n-holography, what we consider superpositions of geometries in the bulk, where we consider quantum gravity effects, basically, we expect these are super selection sectors, where essentially we have different geometries that can be in superposition, where these entanglement wedges, A and A bar in the bulk, can have different shapes depending on the geometry that they describe. And for some finite dimensional system, for some cutoff, where we don't have to worry about type 3 Feynman algebras, we expect this map, this encoding map V, to map from some superposition or superselection sectors in the bulk of these different semi-classical geometries to map to just the tensor product structure of the Hilbert spaces on A and A complement. Next, we already heard this before as well, we expect to find a Ryutaka-Inagi formula. We've already seen this formula in many different ways throughout yesterday. And of course, there's two terms that we expect to find. We expect to find a bulk entropy, which is the entropy of the entanglement wedge, and we expect to find an area term, which somehow describes the area of this extremal cut, gamma A, this Ryutaka-Inagi surface. And once we talk about state dependence and the superselection sectors, we expect that this area really becomes an area operator that depends on what semi-classical geometry we are in. And finally, most importantly, from the perspective of quantum codes, we expect holography to be quantum error correcting, meaning that if we take information that's localized in the bulk, there are many different ways we can recover it on the boundary, and in particular, there's a certain resilience against erasure. So this really tells us a lot about how information is non-locally stored on the boundary. And so the question, of course, is how do happy codes reproduce these features, which we have to understand in order to be able to go beyond them. And so really the main feature of happy codes that allows us to reproduce all these things in the discrete settings is the greedy algorithm. And the greedy algorithm is something that follows directly from the tensor properties of the happy code, which is this perfect tensor condition. So the perfect tensor condition implies that we have certain isometry conditions, meaning that the tensors, once we take the indices, we divide them into two legs. The tensor forms an isometry from the smaller set of indices to the larger one. And this isometry condition means that we can reconstruct information in an algorithmic step, meaning that if we have this tensor over here, and we have access to, for example, four of the physical legs, then we have a recovery operation that allows us to reconstruct this bulk qubit, this red one, and the remaining physical one. And so then we have access to this qubit over here. And so this algorithm we can use to gradually reconstruct the bulk in a discrete fashion. And here's just a little cartoon of what this looks like. So we start with a boundary region A. We apply these algorithmic steps on the left. And so we start eating into the bulk by reconstructing these qubits. And we can do it again. We construct a few more. And finally, the algorithm terminates. And we've reconstructed all that we can reconstruct using this algorithm. We end up reconstructing a discrete greedy wedge, which is a discrete analog of the entanglement wedge. And it is bounded by a cut through the bulk that is the discrete version of the Ryutaka-Inagi formula. We can do the same thing for the complement region, and then we end up reconstructing the complement of this discrete bulk with the same RT surface. And here we already see that I at no point had to know anything about the bulk state of this code, so this reconstruction is completely state independent, which of course is what we expect to find in sort of the semi-classical end to infinity limit of holography, but which doesn't really describe any quantum corrections. And the holographic interpretation of this is really that these happy codes describe a particular class of states in quantum gravity that are known as fixed area states, where essentially the area of these RT surfaces is fixed to some value. Or really the geometry is fixed. This is a small detail that I will talk more about in a second. So holographic codes are state independent. Happy codes are state independent. Okay, so this is the problem with state dependence. The next problem with happy codes relates to RG flows and correlation functions. So let me first look at a picture in the continuum. So if you can take continuum ADS, the time slice, then you can look at an annulus region between two radii, R1 and R2. And you assume that it's very large, so you're in the asymptotic region of ADS. And so now this region, this annulus region, basically defines you a renormalization group flow from the smaller radius to the larger one. And so this isometry is, that you get from this renormalization group flow also inversely gives you a coarse planning transformation in that if you apply an operator at some larger radius R2, you can basically coarse grain it to an effective operator acting on a smaller radius. And so you're basically relating between operators in different discretizations or different UV cutoffs of your boundary CFT. And of course, if you have an operator that under this coarse graining basically stays itself up to a rescaling, then that operator is a representation of a primary operator of a conformal field theory or a discretized version of a conformal field theory. Okay, so that's basically what we want or what we expect in continuum ADS CFT. However, for happy codes, there's a big issue, which is that it's a very good holographic, a very good quantum error correcting code, but in some sense, it's too good. Because most operators, in particular, most small operators, are in fact correctable errors. So if we do this coarse graining, what happens is that we take, for example, a single side operator. It doesn't affect the code space because it's a correctable error, which means that under this coarse graining inverse RG flow, it will just be mapped to the identity operator. And this is a problem, because if this happens, that means that correlation functions of these operators are going to vanish. And that essentially the operator content of the boundary theory that one might want to associate with happy codes is just trivial. The only primary operator that you get out of the theory is just the identity. And consequently, most two and endpoint functions vanish. These are the main two problems with happy codes. They don't have state dependence, and the operator content on the boundary is trivial, so they don't really relate to a CFT. Okay, so we would go beyond that. So here's a wish list for a better holographic toy model. Well, first of all, we want state-dependent bulk reconstruction, at least a little bit. And we want boundary theory with non-trivial primary operators. So the technical term for that is that we want the super operator spectrum to be non-trivial, non-flat. But at the same time, we don't want to break the properties of happy codes that we like. In particular, we want to keep complementary recovery, we want to keep bulk uniformity, and we want to keep, at least up to some epsilon, an exact code construction. Because once we go away from exact codes, from exact stabilizer codes, the analytical tools that we have for analyzing these codes and for applying them basically disappear quickly. So the question is, can we combine all of these nice features? And there was a paper in 2021 by Cao, Pollack, and Wang that basically showed that this is impossible. That essentially, if you want a non-trivial boundary theory, then you have to break one of these three features over here. If you only modify happy codes in the most straightforward way, which is just you take the tensor network on a hyperbolic tiling, and you try to somehow change the local tensors to something else, something non-perfect, really. And you can do this in all kinds of ways, but you're never going to get this whole list from point 1 to point 5. And so what this talk is about, what I'm claiming, is that in fact we can fulfill this entire wish list, but we have to look at a slightly more general class of tensor network codes than the ones that just deform tensors in the happy code. All right, and what are these tensor networks? Well, they are hyperinvariant tensor networks. And so the main idea behind the tensor network class is that instead of just having tensors on each vertex of our hyperbolic tiling, we also have symmetric unitaries on each edge that are inserted within each contraction. And we can choose these tensors if they're symmetric, and these vertex tensors are invariant under cyclic permutations. We can get a tensor network that's completely invariant under the symmetries of the tiling itself. And so that's why these tilings, so tensor networks, are called hyperinvariant tensor networks, because in some sense they're maximally symmetric under the symmetries of the tiling. And otherwise, the features are quite similar. We again have a uniform hyperbolic PQ lattice. As I said, we have two types of tensors. We have these Q-like vertex tensors, which we call A, and these symmetric unitaries, or B tensors, that have two legs. And now something that is quite different from the happy code. For the happy code, we just had a constraint on each single tensor. We assumed it to be perfect. But here in this case, we have single and multi-tensor constraints. So we have some weakened version of perfectness for each individual tensor. We assume that it is one isometric, essentially. And in addition, we have an additional constraint where we basically allow pairs of neighboring tensors or clusters of tensors to form isometries as well. And Glenn Evenbly, in his paper in 2017, showed that if you assume these properties, then you can get states on the boundary that lead to polynomially decaying correlations and have non-trivial operator spectra. It's exactly what we would want from a boundary CFT, a bit like in the Mera tensor networks that we just heard about as well. There is, however, one big problem here, which is that this tensor network that was produced in this paper is just a tensor network without bulk legs. It's not a code. It just gives you states on the boundary. And so what we would want to do, of course, is to uplift this model into a code. So what do we do? Well, naively, we just take the sensor network and we stick in bulk legs everywhere on each of the A tensors. Okay, that's easy, at least easy to draw. But now comes a complicated part, which is that we have to take these constraints, these single and multi-tensor conditions, and change them to a generalized version where we also have these red bulk legs sticking out everywhere. And this makes these constraints much, much harder to fulfill. However, after searching for a while, we found that actually there's a class of surprisingly simple solutions, which is that you take A, so A with this with the additional logical leg, to represent a 412 code for the Q equal to 4 example, and B as Hadamard unitaries, which are basically gates that flip between the Z and X spaces. And turns out if you do that, then you get then you fulfill these constraints. And in particular, as we just learned from this from the last talk, from the formalism, we have now code distance of 2. So that means that these individual codes that we put together are no longer error correcting, but error detecting codes. So they're weaker codes in some sense than the happy codes that we get from perfect tensors. Okay, so as I said, we have different isometry constraints. And these isometry constraints result, if you think about bulk reconstruction, in different greedy algorithms. So for the happy code, the greedy algorithm always proceeds one tensor at a time. So we always reconstruct one logical bulk qubit at a time. Now for the hyperinvariant codes, we have a version of this as well, which is a bit weaker because we have to have basically access to q minus one of the physical legs to reconstruct the logical leg. But we get one additional constraint, one additional step, which is the one over here, where we, if we have neighboring qubits and if we have some access to the physical sides of them, we can reconstruct both of them at the same time. So there's a smaller degree of non-locality in the way that we reconstruct the bulk, which perhaps is not surprising if we want to think about small quantum gravity effects. And well, what happens if we look at the actual reconstruction of the global picture? So you have two tilings for 5-5 happy code and hyperinvariant code. So we can put this on essentially any tiling. We just have to find the right tensors that fulfill these constraints. And so this is basically the same tiling, except that we, here we have these A tensors and these B tensors that fulfill these generalized constraints, whereas on the left, we just have the happy code constraints fulfilled. And what happens when we take a boundary region, if we try to reconstruct the bulk? Well, in the happy codes, we have a very trivial version of complementary recovery, where we just recover the entire bulk, either an A or A complement. But for hyperinvariant codes, it turns out that there's a strip of tensors, basically around the RT surface, around the discretized RT surface, in which the reconstruction of the bulk qubits becomes state dependent. So just by using the greedy algorithm, we cannot decide whether, for example, this qubit is reconstructed on this side, or if the information is somehow shared between them. So we get some small amount of state-dependent reconstruction. Now, this is just a greedy algorithm, so you might say, so maybe it's sort of limited in telling us what kind of state dependence we really have in this model. So let me give you a very simple toy model where you can really see how state dependence work in this model. So as I said, we expect to have state-dependent RT surfaces. That's what we want from a generalization of happy codes, and what we want at finite end holography. And here's a very simple example. We just have these three A tensors connected. These fulfill these single and multi-tensor constraints. And we have these green B tensors in between them. And we have a region A and its complement. And just using these greedy steps that I just told you about earlier, we cannot reconstruct anything. And we cannot say anything about this, this bulk region where it is being recovered. And generally, the information is basically shared between both regions. But now we perform projections onto a subspace of the bulk. In particular, we project this bulk qubit onto a plus state, this one onto a zero state for a particular version of our code. And then we find that the central qubit is now fully reconstructed on A and completely decoupled from the complement region. And now we can do the reverse operation. We can swap these two projections, and we find out that the central qubit is now recovered in the complement region. So here we have a very simple example of state dependence, where the state of the bulk determines the shape of the entanglement wedge. Now, there's one small caveat that's important, which is that actually the area of this RT surface of this cut did not change between these pictures. In any case, it went through four indices. And that's an important constraint that I will mention in a second in the discussion. Okay, so we get state dependence, non-trivial state dependence, but you also get non-trivial superoperator spectra. So as I said previously, in the happy code, we take small operators, we perform a coarse-graining operation, so we have a layer of happy tensors, of perfect tensors, and their complex conjugate. Then they usually map these operators to the identity. For the hyperinvariant codes, we can show that generically this does not happen, and these local operators get coarse-grained to other local operators. And once we write these down, we get constraints that we can solve, and we get a non-trivial primary spectrum. But now, different to the mirror, where you would do such a thing by just fiddling with the numerical parameters of your tensor network, this is all now parameterized by the logical bulk state. So every spectrum that you get on the boundary, every spectrum of primary operators is now related to a particular bulk state that you get. So you have a physical interpretation of what this bulk state means, which I think is quite neat. All right, so with that, I think I've convinced you that, I hope I have convinced you that these hyperinvariant codes have these two features that we wanted from a post-happy code, that we get state dependence and non-trivial boundary operators. So let me review our work. So yeah, we get these two features, and in particular, we do this without breaking the essential feature of the happy codes. There have been many attempts before where people, for example, change the uniformity of the tiling, they add different tensors at different places, or you try to get approximate tensors such as random tensor networks where you have approximate codes. But the nice thing here is that we have still have an exact stabilizer code, which is very nice to analyze, and we'll basically fulfill this wish list that I mentioned earlier. Now, I don't want to praise ourselves too much because there are limitations. So as I said, these codes are exact stabilizer codes, which makes it very nice to analyze them and potentially even implement them on a quantum computer. The problem is that because they're stabilizer codes, we know from a theorem by Charles Tsao that just came out last month that, in fact, stabilizer codes must have trivial error operators. So any holographic code that's based on stabilizer codes must have a trivial error operator. And what that means is essentially that in these superpositions of bulk geometries, the RT surfaces in each superposition must have the same length, the same area. And of course, if we want to have a complete model of finite end holography where we want to have strong perturbations essentially of our geometries that are being in superposition, we expect that this is broken, so we expect to have necessarily, in fact, an approximate code. So in the future, I think at some point we will have to give up looking for holographic codes in stabilizer land, but I think this is as far as we can go with stabilizers. And there are, of course, a few things that we could still look at in the future, things that we're very interested in now that we have this model. In particular, one question is what kind of CFT models, or really discretizations of CFT models, are implementable in this hyperinvariant tensor network code framework. Another question that we are now actively exploring and will be publishing a follow-up paper about soon is what are the practical quantum error correction properties of these codes? Like how well do they behave with respect to certain types of errors, for example? Is there any practical usefulness in implementing them on the quantum computer? And finally, perhaps a bit more interesting to this crowd, is the question of what kind of features of quantum gravity we can see in these models, and whether there's any way we can see dynamical gravity or dynamical quantum gravity if we think about the relationships of these codes in the bulk and the discrete CFT series on the boundary. And with that, I've reached the end of my talk, so I thank you very much for listening, and I'm open for questions.
Thank you very much, Alex. Do we have questions?
Yeah, there's a couple online questions, but first I'm going to ask my question. It's a stupid one. Why can't you just redefine the tensors to absorb the unitaries on the links and then call it a regular tensor network?
That's exactly the same thing I thought when I first read Evan Lee's paper. And in fact, you might think that this would work, but the problem is that for the tensors with which you can do this, so for tensors for which you could do this absorption, so they're symmetric, right? And so the problem is that you, in order to absorb them, you would have to be able to split them into two parts. Basically, each unitary would have to be described as unitary V times its transpose. And the problem is that for exactly these types of symmetric ones that you can absorb, you basically don't get the interesting features that you want for this hyperinvariant code. For in particular, this second class of multi-tensor constraints, these basically cannot be fulfilled with non-perfect. So with these tensors here non-perfect, and you basically cannot fulfill them with splittable unitaries. So the unitaries, in some sense, have to somehow exchange different channels within each qubit.
So is that because we're requiring all the tensors to be the same?
Yeah, exactly. So we have the symmetry condition, right, that we impose on the entire tensor network because we want the tensors to fulfill the symmetries of the tiling.
I see. Okay.
In principle, like, so any tensor that you could split symmetrically into two parts and just absorb in each A tensor, I mean, you could just write it then as a version of the happy code, and you would not be able to fulfill these constraints.
Right. I see. Okay. Thank you. Can I? Sure. Okay. So Stefano, do you want to go ahead and unmute and ask your question?
Thank you, Matt. Hi, Alex. Thank you for the great talk. So I had a web question. You showed that the greedy algorithm fails in the sense that it doesn't allow you to reconstruct tensors in the middle of the bulk. And then you show that there is a state-dependent reconstruction that does not fail and manages to reconstruct the center. So my question is, does this imply that there is no state-independent reconstruction, or is it possible that there is maybe some other state-independent reconstruction other than the greedy algorithm that would allow you to reconstruct the center?
Sorry. I didn't understand the last part of your question.
I just meant that I'm wondering if it's possible, in principle, to find another state-independent reconstruction different from the greedy algorithm that would allow you to reconstruct the center. Or does this imply that the reconstruction is necessarily state-dependent?
Ah, well, if you have a setup like this, for example, with these three tensors, there has to be a state-dependent reconstruction because, if this qubit can be reconstructed either in A or in A bar, you can show this actually on the operator level. You can show how the operators, the poly X and poly Z's basically acting on this logical qubit here, can be pushed to the left and the right, top and bottom. And then if you fix these tensors in the right state, then this operator pushing has additional degrees of freedom that allow it to be reconstructed either completely on A or completely on A complement. And in some sense, this operator reconstruction is the strongest one, right? It goes beyond the greedy algorithm. I don't think there's any way of writing this in a state-independent way.
Maybe I can ask a follow-up question. So on this slide, do I understand correctly that if I just consider product states,
yes,
so 0, plus, plus,
yes,
then A can reconstruct a certain set, and if I consider different product states, like plus, 0, 0, mm-hmm. A can reconstruct a different set of the bulk qubits?
Basically, yes. So, of course, you would want to keep at least one of the logical indices uncontracted because otherwise you don't have any operators to push anywhere.
Yeah, I see. So I think I'm concerned by this because, like an ADS CFT, if some bulk subregion is in the entanglement wedge and I act a local unitary, that won't change the fact that it's in the entanglement wedge. Because it doesn't change the entanglement structure.
Well, it doesn't change the entanglement itself, right? So that's the whole point about this. Maybe let me say a few words about this non-trivial or area operator business. Mm. So the point here is that, as I said, the thing is that the area of this cut doesn't change, right? So that means that the area part doesn't change. Yeah. And so that means that sometimes we have a restricted version of state dependence, which is that we still have non-trivial area operators, but within each eigenvalue of the area operator, we can still have different geometries, which is with the same area. So I would argue that,
You view it as like back reaction of some sort.
Yeah, exactly. There's a notion of back reaction that does not change the area of the RT surface. So it's a very restricted version of state dependence, but it appears in these models.
Okay.
Well, there's one more online question if we have time.
Okay. I believe yes.
Marcus, go ahead.
I have a naive question, which is that is there any way to think about the dependence of the bulk state when we're reconstructing the bulk in terms of like entanglement shadows? I don't know. When you just compared like happy code versus the HTN, it kind of smelled similar to this sort of thing.
So you think something about entanglement shadows? I'm not sure if the acoustics are bad, but
yeah, he said entanglement shadows.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about entanglement shadows in the context of this model. sorry.
Okay, let's end the questions there. Thank you, Alex.